Democracy 101. This is our chance every week to catch up on some of the big issues that affect us and our democracy ahead of the elections. Of course, it's just a little way away. Jack keeps adjusting his Make South Africa Great Again hat.
It's Msaga.
You love this, huh?
Msaga. All day, every day. And in a lead up to the elections, this was the best time to do it, right? Yeah. Just keep this in mind. When you go and vote, think this.
Hey, just by the way, because your surname always leads to these discussions, someone brought up your uncle, Galema Motlanthe.
Yes, sir.
We were talking about people who gave up power.
Mm.
And Galema Motlanthe was asked to be president again, and he was like, nope.
Yep.
So he was also a good example. So
thank God.
At least your family has a good track record in this respect.
Like, we come from a good stock, Gareth. I keep telling you, it's a good stock.
All right. Well, this morning on Democracy 101, I'm thrilled to have Lorenza Eckhart with us. Lorenza, it's a great pleasure to see you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Good morning.
Can this thing quickly? There we go.
Got to shut up the echo. Is it off?
No. It's this thing. It's going to make me want to kill myself.
There we are. All right, very good.
Much better.
So Lorenza, of course, has her own show called Lorenza Eckhart in Gesprek on CakeNet, which actually my parents, I've got to give them credit for this. They introduced me to your show.
Oh, is that right?
It's an awesome show.
Oh, please sign it to your parents for me.
No, I will, but I'll tell you what, it didn't take much to convince me to watch because you have fascinating guests, you have really relevant and useful insights. And I don't know about you, but I turn on the TV sometimes and I'm like, here's a political analyst, but I've never heard of them. They seem to be springing up like flowers.
Everywhere, yeah.
Plucked from obscurity.
Yeah. And the thing about hosting a show like yours isn't necessarily about your opinions or analysis, but the people who come on the show. And you seem to bring some really smart, really thoughtful people in there who have interesting takes I'm not getting from anyone else. So well done.
Thank you so much.
Great show.
We've got a good team.
Yeah, listen, I mean, that's such an important part of it. But also, you seem to ask the right questions, which helps.
Well, I am curious. So I think that's always a good foundation.
It's a good sign, you know? Curious people
just
tend
asking
to...
questions.
All right, before we even get into any of this stuff, you've been a journalist for more than a decade. And you get to speak to these people. This is obviously the most important election we've had in a long time. Everybody's saying that. Yeah. What are the most interesting things you've picked up in the last little while on your show that have made you think, ooh, and I mean, apart from the MK thing, which is kind of a late entry that might have shaken up the odds a bit. There are a bunch of political analysts who are also rubbing their heads going, what the hell do we make of this? But what have you picked up?
Well, that's been interesting, Gareth. And I think something that sort of stood out for me talking to the analysts and political parties is, you know, before previous elections, you had that sort of line from the DA, the main opposition, like, let's not fragment the opposition, don't waste your vote on a smaller party. Now, I think this year, there's a big change. It's been a mindset shift from many voters saying, well, perhaps we should accept as an electorate and as a country, we are a bit more diverse. And it's perhaps not the worst possible thing for me to look at a party that represents my culture, my language, my religious preferences, my tribal preferences, etc. And I think previously it's been a bit of a dismissive attitude from the ANC and the DA, the big parties. I think this time around, they've perhaps wisened to it. To an extent, they're still sort of maybe from certain corners edging on voters to not do that, to not split the vote. But I don't see that strong message coming out and saying, don't waste it on a smaller party. There's a pragmatic politics being sort of exercised, I think. And we see that with a multi-party charter and the MK, as you say, that's sort of just, you know, the joker in the packet this year.
Listen,
I think that's a very apt description.
Yeah, and I like what you're saying here because it also shows me that we're evolving as a democracy. Mm-hmm. Like, there used to be this idea that you either vote for this party or for that one. And I know that there are countries like America where they only have this binary system. You have an option between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But with us, you know, if you're a diverse country, you need diverse options. And my God, have you seen this ballot paper?
The longest one we've ever had.
But, you know, look, I've got no problem with people having diverse thoughts and all of this stuff, but 300 is a bit much.
No, I mean, obviously some of those parties, I've seen them for the first time when they announced them last week at the IEC, and it's actually a joke.
It is.
So that's not good. So I'm not saying we need a million parties.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, last night I had Courtney Mulder of the Freedom Front Plus on the show with Gate McKenzie from the Patriotic Alliance. So they were reacting to John Steenhuisen's message on the weekend Cape Town.
Remind us what John said.
Well, I mean, he was sort of campaigning in the Western Cape saying we can't trust these other parties. And the only reason that they are targeting the Western Cape is because there's nothing else to steal in the other provinces. Now, I've got a big problem with this sort of negative scaremongering politics.
Yeah.
And it's not something that you hear from Alan Windy, the Premier of the Western Cape, by the way. When I speak to him about these issues, he doesn't have this sort of finger wagging of don't take good governance for granted, and if you don't vote for us, we'll get the ANC, FFPA, whatever the doomsday scenario is. You know, he's very happy to focus on the successes of the DA and the Western Cape government. And I think that's much smarter. It's a better way to speak to the electorate. Now, after the show, one of my team members made the comment that he really enjoyed what Courtney Mulder and Gaita McKenzie said. And it was interesting for him, these two diverse politicians on the same panel willing to talk about these issues. And he wishes that they could be on the same ticket or in the same party. Well, but that would be a problem, right?
It's great that you had them both on the show, because I've actually sat in a place where both of them were present. They actually get along quite well. They don't necessarily agree on everything, but they are civil with each other, and there are huge areas of overlap.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely.
It's interesting that both of those guys represent probably very small parties, but parties that know what they're about, right?
Where strong identity.
The big ones, the broad churches, as the ANC's called themselves, and the DA likes to pretend that it is. These parties just, I think a lot of people have also given them a chance for 30 years, and it's like, well,
what now?
There's some fruit there for the DA in the Western Cape. The ANC lived for a long time on that liberation message, but maybe we want to try new things. There's definitely a yearning for something different.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, I think the other thing is just, if these two men were in the same party, then you would have the perhaps internal fighting that we see in these broad church movements. So, I mean, obviously it's problematic if you have these sort of strong leader-driven parties. It's only built around a single individual.
Sure.
But what we are able to do in this election, I think, and this is what I alluded to earlier, is that you have party leaders or parties saying, I'm going to bring this section of the electorate, and I'm going to bring this section out together. They might not vote for a party that both of these leaders, if they were in the same movement, but now we can say, well, this is a, like the PA, a predominantly brown colored party, and the Freedom Front Plus, Afrikaans white party predominantly. Well, it's interesting, they do have a lot of brown support in the Western Cape.
Yeah.
But to say that we're going to bring these people to the table, and now we're going to have a discussion, and I'm going to make sure that my voters, that their needs are met, if we are going to any negotiation scenario. And so it's very uncertain. I think we're on very shaky ground, but it's exciting. And I think that we should embrace this. And I think it's very, I think it's problematic that, as you said earlier, the broad church parties are sort of dismissing this out of hand, or making the Hillary Clinton argument of
those basket of deplorables.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting thought, and I want to hear what you think of this. But one of the biggest missteps, I think, that the DA has made is that they said there's certain parties they won't work with, which is like, you know, you're counting yourself out. Politics is really about the art of the possible if you are one of those kind of people, or it's just pure pragmatism if you're one of the more Gaten, McKenzie, Courtney Mulder type of people. Either way, to say that you won't work with X or Y because of some legacy thing, the average voter is really not interested in that. Most voters are not particularly turned on by ideology or by principle even. I mean, to look for principle with politicians is like, you know, it's like you're looking for health in a hospital.
Yeah.
It's like a very bad idea. Mm-hmm. It's not sanitary.
Yeah.
Do you think that they've all made as glaring an error as that? I mean, the ANC's errors, obviously, they mount every day, and the speaker situation last week has got to also, just from a reputational point of view, this is not helpful.
Like, not in the slightest.
Right.
And they've muddied the waters so much that I don't think there's a single individual in this country that can't list the problems that we have. Like, I think you'd be an idiot not to.
Yeah.
Which actually leads me to my question being, do you think that these opposition parties have missed the opportunity to get their messaging across in such a way that the electorate would be willing to hear them? Because I still feel like the NC still has some sort of or a bit of the share of the bandwidth in terms of the messaging out there.
Absolutely. I think, and listen, just to be clear, I'm not endorsing any party. But I think what's interesting with in the ANC scenario, and we see this with the messaging from the DA, and as John Steenhuisen mentioned this week, and I don't know who's advising him on taking that route, but the sort of scaremongering, finger wagging, you know, it's not different to the ANC sort of very subtly messaging, or
you won't get your grant.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's exactly the same thing. And I think it's so patronizing to the voters.
Yeah.
But for the opposition parties to just stand up and say, well, at least we're not the ANC, you know,
lame.
I think it's lame. It's really, as we say in Afrikaans, it's this verbeelding Lewis. Give me a better message. Don't just tell me why you're not the abusive husband.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's like the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king.
Exactly.
And we have come to expect so little from our politicians. I mean, again, we do have, and this is where I feel like there is an unfair double standard that we have. We judge all the opposition parties much more harshly than we do the ANC. We're always so impressed when the ANC, it's like that mom in the clumps. Hercules. When the ANC get the smallest thing right, like they open that tap in Mpumalanga somewhere, we're like, wow, they did this. Because it's like watching a special needs kid finally be able to tie his own shoelaces. Carl says, Gareth, if you're making a genuine comparison between the ANC and the EFF, you must have shit for brains. Well, listen, all I'm saying is that to exclude parties who are going to get, in the case of all three of the big parties, over 10% of the vote, means you are making a decision that you can't be sure is the right one ahead of time, when there could be reasons that you have to come together. The people of this country are not going to vote all overwhelmingly for one or the other. This is going to be one of those split elections. Coalitions
very
are
fragmented.
Going to be part of it. So keep your options open if you're a party.
Right.
Be practical about it. You never know what's going to happen. You might have to be awkward bedfellows with someone at some point and make compromises.
And ideologically speaking, a lot of these parties aren't that different, if we're being honest.
Well, that.
No, I mean, honestly, I'm of the opinion that South Africa is more invested in personality politics rather than policy.
I think to be fair, Jack, like the Vryheidsfront and Patriotic Alliance do not have a lot of common ground with the EFF or MK, ideologically.
Sure. But I mean, that's we're
agree?
Talking about.
I agree.
Those are some of the high level parties. I'm talking about the parties that make up this long 300 list. Like, a lot of them could disappear if they would just were to have a little meeting.
What like, you mean? You mean you're not voting for the Dikwankwetla Workers' Party?
No. Or the Dafa Party. Maybe, or as Jack, much as I love Dafa.
Maybe something that you made me think of this now is, you know, with these manifesto launches that we've seen, the season of the manifesto launches.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any voters actually read the manifesto. Now, we report on this and we sort of give a summary of the party's big policy points, but I don't know if you've just polled the average voter on the street and you say, identify the three biggest policy differences between the EFF, the ANC, the DA, the PA, VF Plus, ACDP.
Hey, you did this on your show. This was very, I watched that this week.
Okay.
And not in preparation for you coming in, because I wasn't even sure if you're going to be able to make it this morning, but you did some really useful infographics where you broke down the position of all of these parties.
Well,
not
it's
all
important
of them, but
to be educated. So that's our role, is to do that, to educate the voters. But I do think that it is more personality driven, and we've got everyone's on social media, and the smart political leaders have a way of exploiting that. And it's not just the bar being low for the ANC. I mean, you spoke about the EFF earlier. I mean, Julius Malema has flip-flopped on just about any issue we can discuss over the past decade. But he's got a core set of supporters and voters that are not going to turn their back on him, regardless of what he says, because he represents something bigger to them. And for us to just dismiss that out of hand, I think it's a mistake that the ANC have made. Just to come back to the basket of deplorables thing, I think our saving grace as a country is, because of the fragmentation, all of these deplorables that the parties have sort of excommunicated, you know, if you look at the MK, they go into different corners. There's not one big movement where they can coalesce, as we've seen in the US following Donald Trump's rise.
That's an interesting question, because there were concerns some time ago. We've had a lot of IEC people on the show in the same chair that you're sitting in now. And I have, I'm fairly confident that the IEC know what they're doing. They seem to be peopled by some very competent, very smart, very well-meaning, and from my point of view, completely incorruptible people, as far as that's possible in the world. But I think these are people who take their job very seriously. And the IEC, as far as I'm concerned, has allayed any fears I had of that. Will, in your opinion, any of the parties get in the way of the democratic process? You know, we have the Americans on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, are alleging that the other is trying to sabotage democracy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, democracy is now the sacred thing which you dare not criticize. Meanwhile, it's just a very clunky system, maybe the best of all the bad ones, but a clunky system which we use to elect leaders. It's imperfect. The IEC is going to do a reasonable job. Do you think there are any parties who will actively stand in the way of the vote, that will actively go against the principles that we've established now and for 30 years have been mostly practicing in this country?
Well, I think we have this conversation before most elections. I mean, I remember the previous few national elections. There was this concern, especially when the EFF came in, you know, are they going to accept the outcome? But I think what's interesting is all of these parties are so optimistic. You know, all of them will tell you
they're all telling you they're going to get the outright
majority. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, before the vote and even perhaps on the day, they'll be optimistic and think that, you know, their voters will turn out. And I think it's much more difficult to sort of cast aspersions on the election following the fact. And then the IEC can come out and say, but this and this and this and this and happened, because we haven't had any examples in the past of parties sort of getting in the way of stopping people from getting to the ballot. Now, I mean, that's blatant election meddling. We might see subtler forms of that. Just, you know, someone in a rural village or so going in and saying, but don't do this, don't do that. But I mean, that won't be the fault of the IEC. That's just would be a symptom of our politics. So I don't think that we're going to see massive voter disruption. But again, obviously the police, they've got a big role to play, and the political parties as well, to urge their supporters and their voters to respect the democratic process. And then, yeah, as I said, I think following the fact, it'd be much more a bigger challenge to say, well, it wasn't a fair election.
So in the first hour of the show, we were discussing MK's case in... What do you make of it? Jacob Zuma not being able to be on the ballot, essentially. What do you make of that? Are they genuinely trying to get Jacob Zuma back into the presidency? Or is this just some form of a power play that some of us aren't smart enough, I guess, to see through?
Well, I think it's interesting. If anything, it gives us an insight, even more detailed into the man, into Jacob Zuma. I mean, he said that he was recalled.
How much more do we need to know about this man? I mean, we know about his sex life. We know about everything, right?
But I mean, he did say he was recalled. He didn't finish his term. He needs to be able to go and finish what he started. I mean, and that's very scary. And some of the other comments that he's made of maybe suspending the constitution, coming out against gay marriage, you know, all of these, I mean, that's a very sort of blatant dog whistling to conservative part of the electorate. And okay, that's perhaps what, you know, his true colors coming out. And maybe he was tempered within the ANC by more measured forces to say, let's not go down that route. But I think if we're talking about election meddling or disruption, we might see that from the MK if they don't get their way. And he's done this before. I mean, let's just think back to the riots of July 2021. But I think the issues are different. We are a different country today, I think, than we were back then. So to say that we're going to see, you know, 2021 2.0, I don't think that's – I'm not saying that we are going to see that. I'm not very concerned, too concerned about that. But, I mean, it's fascinating.
What sort of feedback do you get from your audience? Because again, people would assume, well, it's Afrikaans, but they would assume it's white, it's a certain age group. But I'm pretty sure you also have a very mixed and interesting diversity of audience feedback. What do they say about some of the things that have been revealed on your show by these politicians, by some of the analysis that's been given by people who are well-placed to be able to call things? And, you know, there's so much polling. And how much of this polling do we take seriously? Yeah. How much of it must we discard? Every party will tell you the polls are absolutely trustworthy if it seems to be good for them. Mm-hmm. But the moment the polling turns against them, then, oh, no, we must just ignore this. Yeah. It's nonsense.
No, it's interesting. I think as journalists and any social gathering I go to, the first question is always,
What's going to happen?
You know, will
you must now look, you read the tea leaves.
Yeah, the tea leaves. And I mean, it's a privilege to be trusted with that kind of insight, but I can't predict the future. Mm-hmm. I'm at the end of
Damn,
the day. I wish
okay,
I could
well, have that's it the end of the show. Let's wrap it up, everybody.
We might as well pack up right now.
It's been lots of fun. Lorenzo, thanks so much.
Sorry about that, guys. False advertising.
Go on.
No, I just, I just think I'm always sort of struck by how invested people are in this country. And I think it's, so these questions, I think the foundation of that is, I mean, because we are all in South Africa, I don't have any plans of leaving.
Oh, no.
And my viewers feel the same way.
Yeah. What did Charlton Heston say when they said they were going to take away his gun out of my cold dead hands?
Absolutely.
Do the same to us.
And so that, it gives me so much hope when people engage with the politics, because it means they care and they care about this country. And it's not, I mean, obviously we've just spoken about how diverse we are, and my viewers are not afraid to sort of say, I feel strongly about this. And there are certain golden threads that weave through the feedback that we get, but I just think it's fantastic. And it gives me so much hope that they engage and they give feedback, and it's very honest. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, I think just to come back to personalities, the reaction that we've always gotten from having Gaetan McKenzie on the show is
people
always
just
he's
got charisma.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's saying this, whether or not they'll vote for him or not, separate matter. A lot of people say, "Oh, he's just a gangster." I think that's very dismissive and rude. But he's made a hell of a lot.
He's full of gangsters, by the way.
Of course, he's made a huge impact in a very short space of time, and he speaks like someone who means what he says. Mm. And we're so sick of performative politicians too.
That's what it is.
Have you at all, because we do a similar sort of show here, it's sometimes difficult to get some of the parties to come to the party.
Absolutely. Mm. Some of them refuse to be on a panel with some of the other party
right.
members.
Right.
Okay, so we won't mention any names.
I want a little bit of insight from you as to who you're struggling to get into studio. Who thinks that they don't need you, because that might be the reason. Mm. Like, why should we go on Lorenzo or Gareth's show? A lot of them, I can understand. Mm. Some of them might look at us and go, who the fuck cares what they say?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. Okay. This is the, you do whatever you want here.
Your parents are not tuned in.
They are. They must deal with it. And then there are the ones who maybe just can't get their act together. They're just badly managed. Sometimes it takes you so long to get them that your producers eventually go, well, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So we've tried with we've got every party leader in here so far except for the Freedom Front Plus leader. We're going to get him. He's on the agenda. Songezo Zibi is also coming in before the elections. But then it's the DA, ANC, EFF. Mm. Obviously, they're the big parties. They're busy. They have to choose very carefully where they position themselves. This is like an ad for them. If they're prepared to buy a big billboard, this is an opportunity for them to state their case. And in many of these people's situations, I'm not a stranger to them. I've met them before. Mm. They've spoken to me before. We've had friendly interactions with all three of the leaders of those parties. I get the feeling the ANC just is doing what Joe Biden did in 2000, just hanging out in the basement.
Yeah.
Hoping that by saying nothing, people will forget all the terrible stuff and go with their feelings and emotions and vote for them because they, you know, brought about freedom 30 years ago.
Yep.
But the EFF and the DA have got to pull their socks up because they could be in trouble, both of them.
No, I mean, I agree. It's well known that President Cyril Ramaphosa very rarely does an interview. I think if he does one big sit down before the election, I'll be very surprised. Mm-hmm. He does a few sort of speaking to the media following an event here, but it's always
What's the benefit?
Exactly.
How's he going to win? It's not like any question he's going to get, he's going to be able to say, oh, we did this. That, right?
So, I mean, you can understand the strategy by the party to perhaps shield him from difficult questions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we are struggling to get the EFF as well. We're working very hard. But I mean, again, it's a political calculation. They perhaps feel like none of their supporters or voters are tuned into my show. But we are pushing. So perhaps soon we'll have Julius Malema in studio, or at least a sit down. I'm
hoping. Do you also hear from people in the know? Because there are obviously people who know a lot more than we do. That they're also, they've the internal reactions. I mean, we saw some of these things with who was the woman who had the big fight with him, and now she's been put at number 200 on the list. And we see these schisms developing between him and Floyd.
Yeah.
And he was recalled from KZN as the party campaign leader there.
But now he's saying if they get their way,
he must be finance minister. Although, by the way, and I think it bears saying, there were two or three things in their point of view about Floyd being finance minister and in their economic plan, which even the most conservative capitalist would regard as being pretty good ideas. Mm. Things like re-industrializing South Africa, spending money on infrastructure, factories. They were talking about tax breaks in special economic zones. These are important things that you would never have heard from the EFF 10 years ago when they started.
But again, I think it's the flip-flopping.
Yeah.
And it's so opportunistic, and the message changes with every election cycle.
You don't believe any of it.
I don't believe any of that. And I think for me...
That's why we've got you here. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I can say this here. But for me, I think the EFF have been hesitant to sort of put their hands up for any leadership positions in councils. And, they don't want to be the mayor where they are.
Because then they'll be measured.
Exactly. Mm. So why did you not allow South Africans to measure you since you've been in power? I mean, I remember... following the local government elections, in Johannesburg, it was Mashaba then from the DA and Malema sort of speaking to the media saying there's no formal coalition, but they've got an agreement, the DA EFF working together. I mean, we know where Johannesburg is today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just put your hand up and get your hands dirty in those roles. But it's hard work. And I think that's another thing. And to give credit to the DA, in the Western Cape, they've got a fantastically well-oiled machine of party members, officials that are well-trained. They've got a very strict internal selection process. And when they are deployed, they know what they're doing. So that's one thing you have to give to the DA, where they have sort of gotten the majority of the support or be able to form a government or council. Mm. They do get in there and they do... get the hands dirty.
You know, a lot has been said about, voter apathy. Do you think it's just a lot of South Africans who've looked at politics in this country and just think to themselves, you know what, I might as well not get involved because half of these people are lying anyway? Or is it people actually recognizing that a lot of these people don't really bring much to the table?
It's such a difficult question that I grapple with that so much. And it's not just youth voter apathy. It's across all age groups.
Yeah.
I think there are certain age groups that are more likely to vote, and we do have data on that. And I'm not smart enough to go into the numbers. But I do think that there is a lack of a hopefulness that we see in the messaging from certain parties, a lot of fear-mongering from all of them. And I just think that's not the way to energize a base or an electorate. And I don't think we are going to see that in the lead-up to the election. I think, you know, the big parties will turn out their bases. They'll do the big squeeze in the week before the election, and we'll see a lot of the same patterns. But I think just in terms of ANC support, I don't think we're going to see enough ANC voters that are willing to go to another party. We do see that with the MK, but we will see a lot of stay away.
So in other words, if a lot of people stay at home, that will be to the benefit of opposition parties?
I think so.
And not to the benefit of the ANC?
I suspect we'll see that.
Okay.
It all depends on the day again.
Yeah.
We don't have a crystal ball, but I think that's what we'll see.
Well, yeah. The IEC is making quite a lot of noise about the fact that we've got 27 million registered voters now, and that's a new record. If everybody who registered goes to vote, which obviously they won't, but if a close proximity of that gets there, then it would be the biggest election we've ever had. Do you think people are motivated in certain respects? I mean, things are pretty tough here.
I think so.
The economy's tough. The electricity situation bothers people. I mean, God, Jack was telling me this morning, they were talking about stage 16.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't even listen. I know that numbers are infinite, but I didn't know that ESCOM's incompetence was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in their defense, it's stage 16 doesn't bring us closer to a blackout. It takes us farther away because it sort of built in a bit of a safety net. Someone explain this.
Are you trying to be optimistic? Or you just explaining that they can insert any number of numbers?
This is a dark cloud and I will find that silver lining.
Yeah.
That is my disposition.
So, I mean, we've got things like the electricity problem, the overall economy problem, crime. Immigration is an issue in this country because we've got a lot of illegal immigrants who are competing with local people for jobs. There are, you know, porous borders which bring in all kinds of other problems. And we also have a couple of kind of down the line issues that people are worried about, but that should be probably bigger. Breakdown of families, we've got a drug issue in this country in poor neighborhoods with tick and all this kind of thing. And I don't know whether parties can hide away anymore, or whether voters can, with good conscience, stay away from their responsibilities.
I get so upset when we have these, you know, 16 days or whatever the days are for activism and the president coming out and saying all men should take a pledge to stay away from gender-based violence. It's so problematic because the socioeconomic issues are so massive, and that's what sort of gives rise to these all of these issues that you've mentioned, Gareth. And I think, the parties have a responsibility to sort of be an alternative, to have an alternate vision for where we can be as a country. But all of that is because of the ANC. I mean, they are the ruling party. It's so interesting. I had Pule Mabe on my show a few years ago. And I mean, they were denying that load shedding was because of ANC failure. It was ESCOM and this board member and these appointments. So there's I don't think we're ever going to see accountability. But this is the fault of the ANC. And if South Africa wants change, then the voters really need to think carefully about whether this party deserved to be trusted again. Now, I'm not telling anyone how to vote, but these are the things that we need to think about when we stand in that voting booth on election day.
Yeah, and we were talking about the speaker just now. There's so many other things that need to be fixed. The National Prosecuting Authority, and you know, I keep speaking to people I know inside of the criminal justice system who tell me, no, things just happen slowly, but they are happening.
Wheels of justice are turning slowly.
And there are going to be some big arrests made. And obviously,
I hear that all the time.
But the speaker is a fairly big name, and this is a big story, and it should be. You know, in terms of our constitution, they are the head of the legislative branch. So this is not a small fry person. It's one of the top three in those three branches of government. And it does indicate that there is some movement. Obviously, it has to result in a conviction. The case has to be argued properly. They have to have their facts in order. One would hope that the NPA has. But in general, you get this feeling in this country, and I'm sure you're viewers express the same frustration, that there isn't accountability. If anything, big business, you hear about people like Marcus Huerster.
Mm-hmm.
He just takes his own life and takes himself out of the equation. But all the people who lost all their money in Steinhoff are stuck with the result. VBS, you know, we can count any number of these, the water situation, the power situation. Mm-hmm. There are so many stories where people, we know who's responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Even in all the commissions that we have, these endless state capture commissions and commissions of inquiry into this and that, but no people in orange uniforms. This frustrates people too. I think if there were a party that just, maybe it is the Yates McKenzies, who say that they're going to stand up, the Freights from Plus is also saying that corruption and that is our biggest issue to tackle. Maybe if they put people in jail, if they can show that that is their main thrust and they can actually put more judges in, restock and give more resources to the NPA. Maybe we'll see people get excited about that stuff again.
I think that's a frustration that people had just at the beginning of Cyril Ramaphosa's term. we want to see big things happening very quickly. Now, to his credit, he did do a lot to sort of restock the NPA. I think we would have been much worse off if Sean Abrams was still the head of that institution. But South Africans should also understand, and this is it's a fantastic thing. It's a great sort of, you know, symptom or aspect of our constitution, is that you can't have political meddling. Ramaphosa, president of the country, South Africa, can't just tell the police who to arrest and who to prosecute. Sure. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It protects everyone. But I think it's interesting because we see reaction on social media following the shooting in Marion Hill last week of that gang and they were terrorizing the community. A lot of people on social media saying, great, that's fantastic. Just shoot these bastards. Mm-hmm. And then we've got here and there a few people saying, but why, it does seem a bit, you know, we can't have a situation where we have these extrajudicial killings and they should have been arrested, taken to court. But how many times do we hear people just being given bail, going out and doing the same thing? So communities are so fed up. And again, I think that was just such an interesting litmus test of where we are as a country following that shooting last week. But yeah, Gareth, I mean, hearing you rattle off all the issues, I don't know. It's
difficult. Because, I mean, when you think about it on a day-to-day basis, I mean, they were asking Julius Malema how much the price of bread is.
Oh, that was a great interview.
Like that. I mean, I think the political class in this country, or the ruling class, are so out of touch. Like the disconnect between where the majority of us live and where they live is so, the gap is so wide that I'm honestly of the thought that perhaps we just should just like slash their salaries. Like,
oh, that'd be a good like, start.
I think that but could lead to.
Yeah, you mentioned Sean Abrams now, and I'd completely forgotten about him. And then I saw on the MK list Des Van Rooyen, and I'd forgotten about him too. And we have made a fair amount of progress. I wouldn't say that we can go and, you know, all cheer Cyril on for the rest of the year. Mm. But there are some things that are happening by hook or by crook, and maybe they're just slow processes. It's like a drip, 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 and you have to wait eventually that, you know, it stops feeling like Chinese water torture and starts filling a dam. But you're right, Jack. It's like these guys are out of touch. And maybe things like putting the speaker in the dock, which is a fairly scary thing for politicians. They haven't seen that for a while in this country. Maybe seeing the Speaker of Parliament and a former minister in the dock in court being given bail. Maybe that just sends a couple of shockwaves through, and we need a few more things like that.
Just on the point of being out of touch, I mean, one of the reasons why she said that she should be granted bail was because of the unhygienic situation.
She was former correctional service minister.
Which I was like, wow, like you didn't have any role in where our prisons are at the moment. Or you know, there's no one here you could have had to just have a little cabinet discussion, even when you were not minister, to say, listen, we need to sort this out. Let's look at the prison system. I mean, that just, it boggles my mind. And,
yeah, and she's not a person who would survive in prison. She, you know, prison's too terrible for her. But for the rest of you, it's fine. Yeah.
And those in prison, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, like you know, justice needs to be seen to be done, right? Yeah. Which is one of the major problems. We haven't seen it in this country. Even
Jacob Zuma's corruption case hasn't even properly started.
Can you believe that?
Our courts are struggling to keep up. That's the reality.
The question then becomes, whose responsibility is it? I don't think, to say that it's the courts that are taking forever to get this done, I think is not looking at this thing in its totality. Like, it's not beyond me to think that these people know the ins and outs of the law so much that they know how to delay, you know, so you justice think it, being done.
So in other words, do not ascribe to incompetence and malice what is just incompetence.
Yeah, it is.
How about this, though? There's a potentially another division in South Africa that we should take a little more seriously. There are those people who think that the state should be capable. There are people who believe that if we just had competent, able, merit-based selection of bureaucrats.
Away from the CADA deployment committee.
Sure, that everything would get better. We'd find people who could do all the jobs that we require a government to do very well. And then there are the people who go, actually, it's perfect that government is incompetent. Mm-hmm. Actually, it allows the individual the greatest amount of autonomy they can possibly have. If you look at Europe and how absolutely overweening that bureaucracy is, if you look at America, which is a republic or empire, depending on point of view, in decline, where the bureaucracy has become so overmighty that it is now called the deep state by conspiracy theorists. But we're essentially Americans, and the Chinese, obviously, we can't move without people seeing every aspect of what you do. Sure, you cross scary. A street, and here, it's the Wild West.
Mm, it is.
And this is something that's come up on the show before. It's not something that you're completely immune to having heard.
Yeah.
But I think in some ways, you can celebrate the fact that if you're capable and you're able to make yourself as independent as possible of the state, this can be paradise.
I agree. And I think we see this with the unemployment statistics. I mean, if we look at that official number, it's talk about these numbers and it boggles the mind, but you would think that we would have July 2021 every month, just
riots,
giving riots, yeah. Food riots, all of that. But the reason we don't is because a lot of these people are hustling. And they are earning a proper and decent living in an informal economy, yeah. Away from bureaucracy, away from applying for a license. Or this
and away and from that. Taxes.
Away from taxes, exactly. Yeah, let's not talk about the cashless push. And I think it builds a fantastic resilience that we South Africans have shown. But I think there's also a big part of the electorate who are properly hutful. Uh-huh. So we've suffered for a long time. Just give us a break. But that break is not going to come. I hate to break it to anyone and to play spoiler. It's not going to come. If you want to make it in this country, you need to be resilient. You need to be resourceful.
And
you
can't you can rely on is the government.
But I will say this, Gareth. It's an interesting sort of discussion, you know, to what extent should the state – obviously, it's an age – the eeuw-oude gesprek. But one thing I think that we should not move away from is to sort of – have the state be the sole custodian of violence. I think we've seen that with crime.
Well, you cannot clash that it's this needy
soul. Yeah, it is not. It isn't. And that's why we have these high levels of crime. And you have these gangs operating in communities where they make sure that people are taken care of. They provide food for a lot of people. But when they're not too happy with something, you know, we see shootings and people are taken out. And again, that's not where we want to be as a country.
That's the bad side of a destruction of the monopoly of violence.
Yeah.
The good side of it is that a lot of what keeps this country together, the glue, is in fact that individuals, families, communities are armed and don't actually care what the police tell them. They carry on with their lives, not people doing bad things. But people who are defending themselves, security companies in this country are an absolute gold mine.
Yeah.
And what do they say, that there are more security guards than there are policemen in
Gareth,
South Africa
just
for the population? I don't think that's always good.
No.
But I mean.
But just think about the emotional expenditure of thinking about making sure you are
safe,
properly armed at all times. I mean, I've covered stories of farm murders extensively. And then you speak to these families and then they will just very nonchalantly tell you that the kids know what to do if mom and dad are taken out. They know where the weapons are. They know how to defend themselves. And they're like young children.
Mm.
And these are,
absolutely
let's
awful.
Just be honest, these are the farmers with the resources that can invest in private security in some instances. Then you have people also living in rural communities that are much more exposed to violence. And so I just think it is obviously an economic opportunity for private security. And if you know how to use a weapon, good for you. Mm. But just personally, how traumatic is that not to go to bed every night thinking, oh, where's my gun?
Mm-hmm.
If someone comes in through this door, what am I going to do? We could just be so much more productive as a country if we did not have to worry about that. So I think just, yeah, keeping state monopoly of violence there is
sure.
Where I would want to go.
Yeah, I just think that if you take
it's not realistic. I get
if
it.
If you take the whole of human history, the anomaly, the anomaly is actually peace. It's not war.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, this is the most peaceful we've ever been
all three of us around this table, and people 10, 20 years older than us, and people 10, 20 years younger than us, are probably the luckiest people in human history.
Without a doubt.
Because we've started to think that, you know, violence is not part of the norm and that we don't have to think about our safety and security.
The country shouldn't be at war.
Yeah, and that the state will look after you. But this is just not the way that it has been for anyone else on Earth at any given time. Put your finger on the timeline anywhere.
Yep.
And this is not the case. You basically woke up in the morning and you're like, I hope I make it to nighttime. Yeah. And if you did... And if you survived with only a few cuts and scrapes as opposed to, you know, being dead, you're like, whoa, I made it.
Yep.
But I do hear you. And it is essentially a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder that so many people are just surviving on a day-to-day basis because of.
Yeah, because
horror stories everywhere.
Yeah.
When you think about it, I mean, it's 2024. We thought we would have gone to a place whereby, I imagine when I was, 10 years old or whatever.
Wait, how old are you now?
I'm 34 now.
Okay.
So when I was 10, I imagined in 2024 there'd be flying cars. And I don't think I was the only one who thought that way. And now look at
us. Like,
where are the flying cars? We barely have electricity. Can you imagine? Somehow we've gone backwards.
We've gone backwards.
Yeah. Instead of forwards, right? So I think with all the innovative ways that we have changed our lives to this point, you can forgive me for thinking that we could have solved a lot more problems than the ones we've actually created. There was this app that Hlomela Damdala talked about some time back. I don't know if they actually did it, but it's like an emergency app on your phone.
Yeah.
If you are being attacked or anything like that, you just press the button and it kind of alerts the people around you. That way of thinking has not become front and center in this country. Instead, it seems as if we're constantly running around putting out fires.
No, it's everyone. And women for themselves.
Yeah.
Did you see that I think it's in New York on the subway station, there are these cards because we've had a lot of attacks and people being shoved in front of the train. So they've got this card and you give it to someone standing close to you and it says, please stand closer. Someone's harassing me. If you see an escalation,
call. You have to hand them a card?
Yeah, a little card. Oh, I'll send you a screenshot.
But that's also because the authority in New York is just not prosecuting bad behavior. Yeah. And if someone does something good, like there was this Daniel someone or another dude who he actually stood up for somebody on a train and then this drug addict had a heart attack or he beat him up or whatever. And then he was prosecuted for being the Good Samaritan. Yeah.
So, but I think it's interesting because I think we do have, given how, I mean, crime knows no race, class. It doesn't discriminate in that way. But I've also done a lot of stories on people sort of standing up for each other, coming together as a community, working together to solve problems. And that's what a crisis sort of necessitates. And we so many crises that we also have amazing examples of South Africans working together.
All right, so I'm going to do what everybody does to you at dinner parties and braais and all the rest of it. Say, what do you think is going to happen? But have you met anyone from any of these political parties? Have you had any conversations with any of these leaders that have immediately given you an optimistic sense of hope or have made you go, oh my God, we're in even worse shit than I thought?
Sometimes that, Gareth.
In gesprek.
I will say one of my family members recently says your show should be Indiekok.
Tell you what, do something for the. I mean, I'm sure your ratings are excellent, but that would definitely bring a few more people.
A special election. No, Gareth, I'm always optimistic. That's just my demeanor and. Not because of what the politicians say, but because of what everyday South Africans say. Mm-hmm. And again, we should remember this is a democracy conversation. And that's what it's about. It's about the people. It's not about these parties. Mm. And I've had a few conversations with some of these leaders, you know, off the record, where you do sort of get the impression that there is an understanding of how angry and upset and just moodless South Africans are. Whether we see a change in political messaging leading up to the election, we might not. But I think regardless of what happens, I think it's a mistake to think that all of this country's problems will be solved following this election if we vote the right way. Mm. Even if just look at this doomsday scenario that the ANC or that the DA are banding about. We can't have the ANC, the EFF and the MK working together. But I mean, they forget that at some point, these three party leaders were in the same party.
Mm.
this sort of doomsday scenario. We've had that and we survived it.
It was all under one roof.
Under one roof.
And
one
they had a more than 66% majority.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
That could change the constitution, and yet they didn't. So,
and we survived that. So don't look at the politicians for
look
solutions.
At ordinary people.
Look at ordinary people. Look at yourself as well. That's where it should start.
Yep.
Well, don't they say that you get the government you deserve?
Yeah, but I have such a problem with like some of these analysts saying, oh, well, you know, see what, you know, blaming the voters. And we see this a lot with ANC voters saying, oh, but you deserve stage 16 or whatever load shedding because you kept voting for this party. But I refuse to believe that, you know, the Gogo sitting in a Lundi or wherever voted for that.
No, I think that, it's patronizing. She wanted to hurt herself.
Exactly. Mm. I think it's patronizing. I think it's problematic to think in those terms. I don't know. I don't quite know what the solution is to solving that issue.
Well, but it's about people getting active. Like a lot of us have, we wax poetic about, you know, I'll do this or I'll come up with this. This guy is a problem because of that. But none of us are actually putting boots on the ground and actually doing things to change things.
There are, I mean, this is where the real heroes in South Africa are. And we've tried to also focus on them in this show and on other shows that we've done here, where you meet people who in communities are making a huge difference. They're looking after other people's children
fixing
while they're
the
at work. They're fixing the potholes.
They're building schools.
Absolutely. Yep. With their own hands, they're doing all this stuff. So there are people who are doing this stuff. Unfortunately, they're not going to run the place as per our conversation earlier, because they don't have the ego to imagine themselves as being president. Mm. And
have you ever used this law to think that they deserve to be sent to the union building?
Like I'm always reticent to criticize Mandela because I thought that what happened.
He's above reproach.
Well, I don't know that, but I think that what happened in South Africa in 94 was a pretty beautiful story. And I don't want to be one.
A miracle.
One of those, you know, what do they call them? Post fact analysts who come in and say, well, if we revise history, it could have been better.
Somehow
we would know better. We would do a better job in 94 if we were in charge. Nonsense. But what I do think, if he did us any disservice at all, it was by giving us the savior complex, this idea that we need one iconic person, like a Jesus, to pull us out of the trouble. And it's not going to happen.
No. It's never going to happen
what
again.
You said.
And not just in South Africa, worldwide.
Everywhere. Is there a single leader in the world that you look at now and go, well, if we just had him, he would solve all of our problems? And if you do, you're naive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think there's a great opportunity in that. And I think this is an evolution as humanity, where we are moving past this, hopefully. And again, maybe in 100 years, we will have another Mandela, or I can't even think of an international example on that same level. But for now, I think it creates opportunity for people to look past political solutions. And just to come back to violence, I mean, it creates a necessity for innovation. We've got an amazing innovative minds in this country working on solutions for our problems away from the politics.
And again, I have to give credit, and I'm not saying this just because you have an Afrikaans show on CakeNet, but I've got to give credit to the Afrikaans people in this country. There's, you know, groups like AfriForum and Solidariteit and those kinds of guys who've built universities.
They've schools.
They've stood up for their people in court. They've stood up for other people in court who are not necessarily from their community. Yeah. They're getting things changing, making things better in small and big ways. And I think that that's amazing. And I've got to give credit to CakeNet. I mean, CakeNet's launched a bunch of really, really interesting shows. And if you don't speak Afrikaans, a lot of these shows have subtitles. So you can go and see them, where they've got very, very smart people who are asking interesting questions, getting interesting answers. It's locally made. These are the kinds of discussions everybody's saying, oh, well, we need more of this, but they're happening. And shows like yours are
Please
doing.
Yeah. In. Monday nights, 8:30.
Before she goes, before you go.
Yeah.
So there was a question that Pennell asked during our Democracy Unplugged.
He's fascinating, that guy.
He is, right?
Have you had him on your show?
No, I haven't. I traveled to Russia with him.
Oh, really?
That's a different story, but yeah.
Cool. Okay. So he asked our panelists, who are you voting for? And if you were to advise the poor population of this country, who would you tell them to vote for?
Tough question.
Well, I mean, I can't endorse a specific party.
Sure.
But all I will say is, you as a voter, just do your research. Do a bit of, I mean, just like an hour between now and 29th of May. It's not going to kill you. And just do some cursory reading on what these parties stand for, what the policies are, not just what they promise and what they've done. Look at the track record. Judge them by the actions, not the words. Mm-hmm. Stay away from these fantastic, elaborate TikTok, social media, YouTube videos and clips, these viral moments. Stay away from that. Look at a long period of what, in certain instances, where these parties are in power, where they govern, where they are able to make a difference, and then make an informed choice. I know it's a bit of a cop-out, Jack. I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. I love it.
No, I don't want you to tell us who you're going to vote for. Yeah. And in South Africa, we don't have a tradition of people having to say who they're going to vote for.
No. Just the last thing as well, just vote.
Yeah.
Regardless of who you vote for, just go out and vote.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, listen, that's a strong place to end it. In gesprek met Lorenzo Eckhart is maandagavond.
Maandagavond, 8:30.
There we go. On CakeNet, and you do that show live.
Yes.
It's amazing. Very cool. If you haven't watched it before, you need to check it out. So, Lorenzo Eckhart, baie dankie dat jy vandag saam met ons hier kon gesels het.
Baie dankie julle twee.
And I hope we'll see you again soon.
Absolutely.
Awesome. That's it for us for today, and we will see you tomorrow. No, tomorrow's Wednesday. Thursday morning, 6 a.m. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.